Okay, I gotta get out of this prison. Hello and welcome to the Android Police podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. This week on the show, we are closing the loop on the beeper hoopla. I guess that's the only way to put it. We talked a lot about the emergence of iMessage on Android last week, and it is no surprise that drama took over in the days to follow, and beeper went down and then went back up. It's now sort of, I don't know, it's in a state of purgatory that we need to talk a little bit about. It's good, it's still here, but it's not gonna be the product that we want it to be. I don't think Apple's gonna let it be the product that we want it to be. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Obviously the big story this week is Google lost its court case with Epic. It is a big deal. We'll walk through some of the ramifications, the potential ramifications there, and just why Google lost this case, a case that appeared from the outset to be stronger for Google than the equivalent one for Apple, right? Apple operates a closed ecosystem. It did not let developers even link to outside of its apps, and yet Epic only won a very small tenet of that trial, whereas Google handily lost everything. And I think it just shows that the public perception of Google played a big part of this. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then we have our year-end awards. So those are going live on the site. By the time you listen to this, the first post will be live. And we'll talk through the winners and runners-up. So Will, Ara, how are you doing?
I'm good. Our kitten has decided to wake up Maddie and myself at increasingly early times in the middle of the night, which is really fun for my sleep schedule. Last night, he did it twice. He did it at 2 and 6 in the morning. So I'm feeling well rested.
So you have a toddler.
We have a toddler. I genuinely, before I hopped on this call, was like, if I complain to Daniel about the cat, he's just going to be like, well, I have kids, so I know it. But yeah, it genuinely feels like we have a toddler right now, just like literally running. We've been keeping the cats separate because they're still learning to get along. And he managed to get the door open last night because he was in a separate part of the house. And we don't really know how. So
is that impressive? I mean, that sounds impressive.
I
kitten shouldn't know how to open the door.
It's impressive in retrospect because it was one of those things where at 2 in the morning, I didn't realize it was 2 in the morning until Maddie told me this morning. At 2 in the morning, I was more just confused and tired. And this morning I was like, I really don't know how he did that, but good job.
Ara, you're back. Welcome back. We missed you. Mm-hmm. How was your time off?
Well, I'm back and my brain is still in vacation mode. So
yeah.
That's not a great thing to say on Thursday.
Well, that's the problem with taking time off. And this is not your fault, but taking time off, you know, 2 weeks before the holidays is like the easiest way to get yourself into like, I'm on Christmas mode. I'm on winter vacation mode already. And like, you got to power through it.
Yeah.
I mean, autopilot is a thing in December, I think. Everybody just, you know, is running on fumes. So
it's like everyone gets senioritis, but for the year.
We're so close to the end of the year. I'm excited to actually take a day or two off, which I haven't done in a long time. So. Well, it's good to have you back. Hopefully you can get through this, and we'll do our roundup call or our roundup episode next week with all of our favorite media. And then we'll have a week off before the end of the year, and then we'll come back and dive into CES, which is increasingly terrible, but an inevitability
at least it's a week late this year, so we actually have a week back to prep things, and we're not drastically prepping for CES the last week of the year leading up to New Year's.
Yeah, but we know what's coming in January, too. It's like the monster just doesn't let up. So anyway, we'll get there. Time will catch up with us, whether we like it or not. So first, let's just talk about beeper, right? Let's just finish the conversation that unfortunately we didn't get a chance to finish last week. What is the state of iMessage on Android right now, Will? Because in the days after we recorded, beeper went down. And then Eric Majakovsky and their team stayed up all night to try to fix it. And then they came up with a statement, and it's messy. It's messier than it should have been, but it also feels unsurprising that Apple quietly just dismantled their whole business model within a couple of days.
Yeah, well, this is kind of funny because so we recorded our beeper conversation on Thursday of last week, and literally within 24 hours, like, everything had changed. That is just one of the unfortunate things about recording an episode on Thursday that goes out on Sunday. But effectively, the big marquee features of Beeper Mini, which is that you don't need an Apple account to use it, and it registers your phone number with iMessage, those are gone. So Apple, as expected, ? We certainly, you and I, Daniel, certainly talked about it. I brought up my Palm example of a way that, like, Apple has messed with companies like this before. Apple admitted to being like, yeah, like, it's a security problem that Beeper can do this, so we broke Beeper Mini behind the scenes. Like, it doesn't matter if it's, like, they didn't say this, but, like, their internal thinking is almost certainly, it doesn't matter if we're breaking, like, older devices. Like, we need to keep iMessage secure, quote-unquote secure, and Beeper, as honest as their goals might seem to be, from Apple's perspective, is nothing more than, like, someone trying to, I don't want to say hijack, because that's a pretty negative word, but certainly, like, hitch onto the service as an unofficial client. And I really think that, like, moving from the towers of Mac Minis acting as relay servers into, we're going to register your phone number and your Pixel 8 is going to pretend it's an iPhone, is, like, really what crossed the Rubicon here for Apple. But yeah, since then, it has been kind of a mess. It is a completely different mess than Nothing Chats and Sunbird, which I think is almost a little funny. It's kind of been an ongoing battle to keep the app up or down. So it kind of came back Sunday, or Monday, I should say, like, in full form. As I said, without the ability to send from your phone number. So you had to log in with an Apple ID, which was one of the big things it was promoting. And you had to send it from your email address, which is not really what I think most people want. In this process, by the way, like, Beeper Cloud also was having issues with iMessage. Like, it is also breaking parts of Beeper Cloud, which is the legacy tool renamed. There's a couple, like, funny side stories. Elizabeth Warren tweeted support for Beeper. I am dying to know which intern working for Elizabeth Warren was excited for Beeper, presumably to finally get put on the group chats they were left out of. I don't know how else Elizabeth Warren knew about this. Like, I'm not saying she's not plugged in, but, like, it is a crazy thing for a senator to weigh in on. So if you are that intern, please write into the show. I would love to talk to you.
I love, like, that it's also Amy Klobuchar.
I didn't even see Amy's. That's funny.
Yeah. Amy, I think Amy's was a little later. It was okay. December 11th, so yeah, okay. Monday.
That's the day that Beeper Mini, like, went fully back up. Elizabeth Warren's was over the weekend. As we're recording this on Thursday, the app went down again last night. It went back up today. Once again, Apple seems to be trying to break it, even in its current, more limited state of no phone number support. You know, I wanted to write about this week, and talking to James Peckham, our editor-in-chief, I was like, I really feel like I'm out of things to say about Beeper and about iMessage and Android, about messaging in general. And we had, like, a 5-minute conversation that ended with me going, all right, well, shit, I guess I have something to say. And then I wrote 2,000 more words that you can go read on the site that I really do think is my last piece on this. It's called Android Users Don't Want iMessage, They Just Want Peace. I really think all of this comes down to, like, it's not even about iMessage anymore. It's literally just that I think the vast majority of smartphone users, regardless of what platform they're on in the US and other iMessage-centric territories, are tired of having to think about applications and just want to talk to their friends. I know there are people who are diehard iMessage fans or diehard anti-iMessage fans, I guess. There aren't really diehard RCS fans. Although, if you are, email into the show. But I really think that, like, most of this comes down to, like, I just am tired of thinking about apps and talking to people about apps. And I'm curious if RCS kind of fixes this in a year, if we're in a very different space than we are now. But I think all of the noise about Beeper and about Nothing Chats before it points to people just, like, looking for a solution to a problem that I think Apple developed itself, that Apple essentially made its messaging platform in a way that punishes not just anyone with an Android device, but anyone who wants to text anyone with an Android device, all to create social pressure to increase phone sales. And I think people are tired of that, rightfully so. And I hope the adoption of Arceus changes that. Again, we won't really know until this time next year how that happens, but that's kind of where I am on it. I hope Beeper continues to work. I hope they get phone number registration back. It's going to be an ongoing battle the way that Palm and iTunes were an ongoing battle literally almost 15 years ago. So I don't have a lot of hope for this app going forward. You know, they disabled subscriptions, which was another issue that I think Apple probably took umbrage with. But yeah, that's kind of where we leave Beeper. I can't imagine. Well, you know, I don't want to say there's no more twists and turns in this story because who knows at this point. But I think that's kind of where we are with it.
So here's my question. Would Apple have taken as much umbrage of Beeper if they had come out with no paid subscription plan from the beginning? If they had found a way to monetize the service in another way or whatever, if they'd open sourced it from day one? Although, you know, again, like the proof of concept is open source, right? It's available on GitHub. You can run that on a Linux computer if you want. But it's like there are some proprietary elements built into Beeper, I think, that were not in the proof of concept.
Not to cut you off, but I think the answer is like, yes, Apple is going to go after this basically no matter what, because they have spent the last, I mean, decade, but really 5 years especially, selling iMessage as the most secure messaging platform that you can use today, which is stupid because
it's not one,
like it. I mean, iMessage is relatively secure. Like, if you are only messaging other people with an iPhone, the issue is that like messages and iMessage are two different things, but like to most people, they're not. Like, I mean, they are, but like it's about blue bubbles and green bubbles. It always has been. Like, it doesn't matter that you want to say that people's obsession with bubble colors is stupid. It's not about that. It's about enriched messaging. It's about secure messaging. Apple has spent so much time selling that narrative that like they can't let an unauthorized third party attach itself. Like that is a security hole, basically. Like, that's what this 16-year-old found when they reverse engineered iMessage, is that they found a security hole. And like, arguably a pretty massive one, because you can just register any phone number as an iMessage account. Now, granted, like, I don't know if you could use it to cause, I don't know if you could use it for malice. Like, it seems like it's a pretty benign security hole in terms of just being able to like activate a phone number. But like, regardless, that's how Apple sees it. So I think no matter what, like, this was going to happen.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I just think there's two things happening here. One is Tim Sweeney building Fortnite, and then there's the Tim Sweeney pulling a switcheroo in the middle of the night and taking payments out of the Apple and Google ecosystems, right? Like, Eric Mijakovsky releases Beeper probably knowing that Apple is going to shut it down, and is now becoming an advocate and an activist for the future of regulation in the US, right? And I think he's trying to do what Tim Sweeney did 4 years ago. And it's not working.
Has all but said it. I mean, Eric tweeted 17 hours ago as we're recording this, at Tim Sweeney Epic, and Epic won this week against big tech. We have a chance. We're not giving up. Like, I really think Eric does see himself as another in this battle, as another Tim Sweeney, as another Epic versus Google. And it's a great comparison, because like, you can say Beeper's farm of Mac mini servers was Fortnite running as an APK download, or whatever. And then it's a thing that Apple is certainly aware of. Like, there's no way they don't know these apps exist, but they can ignore them because, one, they're fairly small, and two, the security risk is completely on the side of the Android user who is going to hand over their Apple credentials. And then the second it becomes, no, we're looping into your system, it's like, okay, well, now they're taking action.
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument is kind of similar in the sense that Apple proved that it can run what is essentially a monopoly in a closed ecosystem with no repercussions in the US, as long as they are very honest about their goals. To be completely fair about it, right? Like, the EU just took iMessage off of its list of platforms that would be impacted in its upcoming regulations, because while they consider Apple to be a gatekeeper, They don't consider iMessage to be a platform that requires interoperability. The scale in the EU is not what it needs to qualify, whereas WhatsApp does. And I think that is, while obviously the percentage of people in the US using iMessage is much higher than it would be in the EU, I just don't think Beeper has the same argument to make, right? Apple has no obligation to open iMessage. And I think it committing to supporting RCS is as good as we're ever going to get. And yet it was so close. There were a few hours last week where you had the ability to send RCS messages and perfect iMessages at the same time on your Android phone. And you saw this future as, okay, this is it. This is the future that we could potentially live in harmony, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, rose petals falling from the sky. And like, that was great, but it was never meant to last. Like, Apple would obviously find a workaround here. As smart as the engineering that went into reverse engineering the, you know, iMessage protocol was, like, it's still taking advantage of somewhat of a loophole on Apple's side.
Yeah, and I end my piece with this, but I will say that I am completely over Apple's argument about security, as Ara pointed out. If you are an iMessage user, I am sure people exist out there who live in social circles where literally 100% of people have iPhones. I'm not doubting that, specifically in the US.
The second you introduce SMS, the whole security argument with iMessage falls apart.
Exactly, exactly. iMessage, and this will change with the addition of RCS and the addition of encryption to RCS, which Apple is saying it's going to work with the GSMA on, but there's no one out there who, like, you know, we're talking text confirmations or, like, you know, for appointments or any kind of like one-time password codes, like every iMessage user interacts with SMS as an unsecured platform at some point, probably on a daily basis, if they're not actually texting people with an Android phone, you know, a friend with an Android phone or whatever. And I'm tired of Apple being able to be like, no, we're secure if you're, you know, only messaging iPhone people, as if that's an option at all, as if this is like a world that exists. I think it's a silly reality that is fake. And, you know, if they really think their platform is so good, they should put it on Android, charge a subscription fee, whatever. God knows that's a thing that they love to do at this point.
Even just put it on Android and, like, oh, you can't have like the cool stickers or you can't use some of the features. At least let iMessage, the messages work. If all the fancy shit doesn't work, I'm okay with that.
It just comes down
to the it doesn't work at all that makes just so hard to get behind.
And more importantly, like, if you think you are better than WhatsApp, if you think your platform is better than Telegram or Signal or whatever, put your money where your mouth is. Like, I know they're not going to be very clear, but like, I'm tired of talking about this, about messaging, from the way Apple wants me to talk about it. Like, the truth is that their platform at the end of the day is like fundamentally less secure than basically every other modern messaging platform, because like, you are going to have to use SMS to communicate with either other people or just like phone numbers that are not connected to. I mean, God, like, I was doing roof estimates and texting people about roof estimates, and half of them have Android phones, either their work phone or it's their personal phone, but whatever, stuff like that. Like, you are going to have conversations that are going to fall back to SMS and are therefore unencrypted. And you don't get to pretend to be the haven of security if you are going to force half of the users in the US to deal with
40%.
That. Sure. Well, I meant like, let's split it up, right? But like, I guess in a certain way, Apple forces everyone to deal with, like, every user in the US has to deal with insecure messages because Android users can't message them via, I mean, granted, Google encrypted RCS, and Apple users are messaging people via SMS. So, like, it's all because of Apple, if you think about it, but regardless, neither here nor there.
But what I mean by that is I'm not just correcting you for the sake of it. What I'm saying is, like, Apple's iPhone market share is growing in the US.
Yeah.
And as it gets closer and closer to 100%, it'll obviously never get to 100%. But as iOS becomes a supermajority of the platform usage in the US, which it likely will at some point, right? If trajectory continues in the next few years, will there be enough pressure on Apple to make iMessage interoperable? I mean, I feel like if this was reversed, if iMessage was the dominant messaging platform in the EU, it would be without question regulated tomorrow. But the appetite for regulation is not there in the U.S. I mean, Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren tweeting once about this is not indicative of a like a wholesale movement to regulate Apple in this way. Like other companies, like the states and the DOJ have sued Google and Apple and Amazon for many other things related to antitrust and anti-competitive practices. I don't think they're going to nail Apple for iMessage. They just won't. So now we are again once again in purgatory where technically Beeper works, but it's probably never going to be consistent, and it'll be this cat and mouse game that you won't be able to register phone numbers, so you'll have to have an Apple ID, which means like you probably already own an iPad if you don't own an iPhone already or a Mac, and then sometimes your messages will go through, sometimes it won't. And if they're not able to use the core infrastructure, they're still going to have to rely on Relay, which will increase their costs because they're still going to have all of those Mac Mini VMs in some warehouse somewhere. And by saying that they're not going to charge their users, at some point, Beeper is just going to either peter out and die, or they're going to have to, what VC is going to give them funding at this point, unless they have another product that will diversify their revenue stream and actually start bringing in money. And while I'm sure Eric Mijakovsky is happy to self-fund this for now, that will not be the case forever. And I think $2 a month was at least a business model, right? They can't go back to $2 a month. So I think they're just stuck. And I don't think Apple will just, like, it's a gnat that they keep having to smack away. But they're going to do it because they can. All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about this trial. Obviously, we've spoken a little bit about this trial before, but let's just go over the basic tenets of what Epic is asking or was asking the jury to decide, right? They sued Google in 2021, right after they sued Apple, for the same thing, basically alleging that Google operated the Play Store as an illegal monopoly, that they controlled the distribution of apps and games on Android to the point where they were suppressing real competition. And one can argue that Google has always made it way easier for app developers, publishers, big companies to distribute their apps outside of the Play Store. We've been downloading APKs since 2009, baby. Like, what are you talking about? Epic has no leg to stand on here. And yet, as the trial went on, it became very clear that Google was not playing a fair game. They were just not allowing competitors to even think about launching their versions of the Play Store on Android, even though technically it was true. And there were kind of three things that Google did that really pissed off the judge and the jury and led to a sound defeat. One was that they had plans long before Epic pulled its stunt in 2020 to either buy up competitors or spend lots of money to keep those competitors from building competing app stores. They communicated with one another within Google and deleted chats that they knew would be brought up in discovery for an inevitable trial. And they basically lied to the public about the state of the Play Store when it came to competition. So they said that they were in lockstep with their partners, with Samsung, with Motorola, with companies like Blizzard, Activision, and King. And yet behind the scenes, they had a project called Project Hug that was actually, if not paying them outright to not create Play Store competitors, they were finding ways of money exchanging hands that led to the same outcome. And they just were not honest about it. And I think all of those things, in comparison to the way that Apple runs its app store, which is like very, very locked down, but they were always upfront and honest about that. And they, again, like what we talked about with Beeper, they use privacy and security as the raison d'etre for everything they did. And it mostly worked. The argument held water, whereas Google's argument just disintegrated, and the jury found them to be the antagonist here. They found them to be unreliable narrators of their own story, and ultimately they took advantage of the system. And over time, we saw that Google made more money per sale on the Play Store because it tightened control of the Play Store to the point where a couple of years ago they were making, what was it, like 76 cents per dollar? Like it was just a lot of money, or 70 cents per dollar or something. So it's not surprising that Google lost.
No. Well, I mean, basically the entire problem with Google was the don't be evil company decided to stop doing that.
They did that a long time ago, though.
They did that a long time ago, but that's also when they started doing this stuff, too. So, yeah, no, it also comes back to it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. It's, yeah, we had all this shady stuff. If they had been more upfront about, yeah, we give deals to certain companies that we deem to be worthy partners, we would not be in this situation, I don't think. It's the, oh, we give the same deal to everybody, but JK, no, we don't. That screwed them. Yeah. Even if what you're doing is not going to seem dishonest or favoritism, at least telling the truth about it makes it easier for you to do it without getting caught for other things that you should have been able to win. They should have been able to win this. It's just hiding things doesn't help you, especially when you know you're going to get sued for these things.
Yeah, I mean, look, like the other part of it too was that Google kept saying that they didn't have any special deals with partners and then did. And like we know now through the discovery process of this trial that they let companies like Spotify get away with 0% payment fees in exchange for not leaving Google's payment infrastructure, right? So it wasn't that, unlike in Apple's case where you weren't allowed to have third-party payment processors in the app, Google allows you to link out to web browsers and stuff. That's never been a prohibition of Google's policy. But then they went to Spotify and were like, look, we hear that you want to move off of our payment processing. We'll just cut your fee to 0% so you can keep the entire thing as long as you keep using our system, so that we can say publicly that we have companies like Spotify using our payment processing because they love Google and they love the Play Store.
I'm not trying to give Google a break here. Like, they effectively lost this trial. I mean, they lost this trial because they lied and they hid things and they deleted messages and they just looked bad. But they also lost this trial because, like, they had to do this stuff because Android is a more open platform than iOS. But all of this stuff was so much shadier than Apple being like, fuck you. Like, where are you going to go? You don't have anything else to go to. This is a closed ecosystem. And so, like, if you want to be on iPhone, and you do, like, you have to follow our rules, versus the Play Store versus Google being like, well, technically you could leave, but that would be such a bad look that, like, we'll just cut you this sweetheart deal, and now everybody's happy, and, like, it's all in the hush, and we can be like, well, why would Match Group want to leave? Look at Spotify. They don't have an issue with it. And the reason is because it's at 0% or whatever, right? And it's like, at the end of the day, like, yeah, Google's platform is more open than Apple, although we'll see where we are in a year. But it's just funny that, like, that openness causes them to do things that are, like, way more obviously wrong compared to what Apple was doing when they're upfront and very honest of, like, well, I don't want to say honest, but they're very open about, like, you have to follow our rules. It's that, like, and our rules are the first and last word on it, period.
I will say, thank God Epic didn't sue for damages in this case, because they probably would have won millions or possibly billions, but they didn't sue for damages. So I'm really curious as to what the heck goes on in the damages and awards section here after this ruling. Yeah, sure. There could be damages brought up by the judge that weren't, like, explicitly sought after by Epic. But I don't see this trial particularly going in that direction. I think this is going to be more like punitive, like, oh, you lied, you committed a fraud to the public. Here, you're going to pay up for that.
I mean, so what Epic wants the court to do is basically make Google, you know, open it up so that developers can use their own billing systems on Android, right? And so, like, yes, Epic didn't sue for damages, but if Fortnite is put back on the Play Store with Epic's own billing system in place, let's say like Google appeals, we go through this entire process for the next fucking 3 years, 4 years, who knows? And like, let's say Epic wins every step of the way. Fortnite is put back on the Play Store with Epic's billing system in place. And just by not paying that 30% to Google, they make millions, billions of more dollars anyway. Like, that's the damages. That's where they get the money from.
Mm-hmm.
What it increasingly looked like is that, as you said, right, Google made its own bed by making Android a little bit open, but not open enough that it was willing to sacrifice some of these business deals.
Truly, they wanted it both ways.
Yes.
They did, and it became a house of cards. And what's evident here is that when you make one deal with somebody, you have to make the same deal with another company because they're going to talk. Regardless of whether they sign NDAs, they will talk, right? It may not get out to the public, and it didn't. Google was lucky enough that it took until 2023 and a trial of this size for some of these emails and conversations to get out. But like, Google knew what was going to happen here because it deleted the conversations. It did everything it could to cover up some of these big deals. And I think what I keep coming back to is what happens in another quantum parallel universe where Google decides to let Activision Blizzard distribute its own app store, or if Riot Games decides to let people download League of Legends for Android directly from their website, or if Supercell decides to partner with Epic to create some sort of Steam for Android and put AAA games at a 15% commission rate on Android, right? Like, the Play Store is still there. It's still the first thing that people see. You know, we look at the distribution of OEMs. You can take for granted that Samsung here is the company that benefits the most from this because it gets to say, okay, we're not necessarily making money from the Galaxy Store. So instead, we put League of Legends on the home screen, or we put the Epic Game Store on the home screen, which is actually what they did for a while before Google got involved. And does that materially impact Google's bottom line? I mean, probably, but not enough that it completely undermines the dominance of the Play Store. It just keeps Tim Sweeney at bay. Because what Tim Sweeney's saying is he's not against Google charging 15 to 30%. He's saying that they want the ability to offer lower payment options outside of the Play Store model. And if Google's really the best way to distribute, and it's still got partnerships with Samsung and Motorola and OnePlus, that's where people are going to go. It's like it is today, where if you go to the App Store or Play Store and you decide to purchase a subscription, a lot of companies will charge you a 15% surcharge because they are building that in. But if you know better, you can go directly to their website and sign up for that subscription for 15% less. That's true. It's always been true. And I wonder if Google, I mean, obviously they're regretting it now, but if they had the foresight not to mess this up 5-6 years ago, they wouldn't have lost this trial. There would not be a trial. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know what's so funny is that, like, we know what this would look like, and like, Epic's involved in the example. Obviously there's the Galaxy Store and the Amazon App Store, but like, even that aside, I think if Google had gone that route, right, and there was the Activision Blizzard store and whatever other app stores opened up and partnerships and whatever, it would look like what PC gaming looks like today, which is Steam is the dominant place that everyone uses. Whether or not you have a Steam Deck, it doesn't matter. Like, if you were playing PC games, first app you download is Steam. Maybe you download the Epic Game Store, but I would say, largely speaking, the Epic Game Store, despite high profile exclusives, right, is currently a failure 5 years in. We learned in this court case it has not turned a profit, right? It doesn't matter that the store promotes its 88-12 split. Gamers don't care. I think mobile app users would care even less, because that's just kind of how the market works. And I mean, those are kind of the two, right? Like, every other, like, game launcher on PC that tried to do it, you know, especially the big publishers like EA or Ubisoft or Activision Blizzard, all of them basically gave up and went back to Steam, or like made it so that like it kind of runs in the background, but you can go buy Star Wars Jedi Survivor on Steam or whatever, right? And like those games weren't there for a while, and Epic's kind of the one still doing it, right? You can't buy Alan Wake 2 on Steam, and you still see people being like, yeah, I'm not going to play Alan Wake 2 on PC then or whatever, right? Like, I genuinely think that the best example you can find for what Android would look like in terms of its App Store situation is the PC, and the Play Store would have all of the advantages of being the first app you see, as you said, Daniel, the default experience, the one people know. It had already built up years of people downloading apps and buying apps and subscribing to apps by the time this stuff would have come into play. Yes, Google probably would have lost some money in the same way that like people do buy Alan Wake 2 on PC and can't pay Steam for it. But Valve seems to be doing fine. Like, I think Google would be doing fine. And in fact, as you said, they'd be better off than they are losing this lawsuit.
I also think that Google underestimated how much users are willing to just stick to the platform, like the payment platform that they know. Because like, okay, for like Spotify or something, yeah, sure, I'll go to their website and sign in and do that. For most of these apps, especially for games, like any game that is potentially geared towards children, parents, I believe, would pay extra in order to have it run through Google. So that's like, okay, there is oversight on this. If something goes wrong, I can fix it.
It's the app they know, right? Like, it's like, oh, I don't know what is a Blizzard. I don't know what that is. I know what the Play Store is. You can use that. Like, 100%.
And a third-party billing system just takes you so completely out of the experience, just so removed from the app and the experience that a lot of people aren't going to want to hassle with it. Oh, I will go ahead and subscribe.
I do not think Tim Sweeney gets off scot-free, right? Epic does not get off scot-free, right? They had a point to make, and the law, the system worked in their favor, right? They discovered just how grimy Google acted, and they exploited that fact. But the reality is, whether or not the argument was stronger for the Google case than the Apple case, I think Tim Sweeney is an activist. He's tried to make a point, but he's also a business person who's trying to leverage his position to make Epic a more successful company. And a lot of the stuff that he said during and after the trial speaks to the fact that, like, he probably would have done stuff similarly to Google if he had been in their position. For example, Fortnite, not available on the Steam Deck or Steam OS. Why is that?
Oh, are we going to talk about their dumb quote? This is so stupid.
The stupidest thing I've heard Tim Sweeney say is that they don't have enough developers to port it to Linux. Like, give me a fucking break. Proton is an emulation layer. Proton
game's on
will
Android.
Just do it for you.
The Android is based on Linux. What are you talking about? Like, you just don't want it.
It's just an absurd argument.
It is not hard to get the Epic Game Store running on a Steam Deck because of Proton. Like, the answer is they don't want it on Steam.
Yes, exactly. And like, whether or not you acknowledge that you are in a much worse position than your closest competitor, which is Steam and its massively successful store, I think Epic has a bunch of successes, right? The Unreal Engine is a huge success. I think Fortnite is an institution, and Fortnite alone
it
could be considered
crazy that Fortnite still matters.
Play store. I mean, it could be a store in and of itself. It is in some ways, right? They distribute content through Fortnite. And if you wanted
to
sell
more than ever,
other...
they've got three games coming to it. The Lego survival game. They've got like a Rock Band style game because they own Harmonix, right? Like all this, they're essentially making like a kart racer out of Rocket League in there. Like, yeah, like it's just like a games platform now. It's genuinely, if you went back to 2018 and you told me like, yeah, not only does Fortnite still matter 5 years from now, and it wasn't like a Pokemon Go style fad where, you know, people still play it, but no one really talks about it anymore. It's like arguably bigger than ever.
Exactly. And like the fact that they don't want to bring it to Steam has nothing to do with the fact that Valve would take a X percent cut of everything they sell in Fortnite if it was on Steam. Like, I'm pretty sure that factors into their decision. So... Mm-hmm.
Tens of millions of Steam Deck buyers is what we're looking for. And if it ever hits 50 million Steam Deck owners, I'm sure that number would be like, well, like if it was 100 million, maybe. But like, you know, like the answer is like, you're not going to do it because you don't want to lose money from it. Like, why are
you? The Steam Deck is an unreserved success. It has done so much for the goodwill of Steam as a brand, right? Yeah. I would guess in a heartbeat, Tim Sweeney would do the same thing if he could for the Epic Store. I mean, I remember back in the day when HTC partnered with Facebook to come out with the Rhythm that had a dedicated Facebook button. You know, if there could be a piece of hardware that like primarily ran Fortnite, I am fairly certain that Tim Sweeney would launch that sucker for $200 and, you know, charge you $1.99 per skin.
There is. I guess Fortnite's not on the App Store anymore, is it? I was going to say it's every 10-year-old's iPad, but that's not a joke that works. It's every 10-year-old's PS5. There we go.
Yeah.
That's true. But also, like, you can play Fortnite on Android if you really want to. It's on the Play Store again. So, you know, it's not so hard.
I think Steam is going to continue to sell more Steam Decks. You know, I was one of the people who was holding out, and we'll talk more about the Steam Deck next week, I think, when we talk about media, because that's how I've been playing games now. But I was holding out of like, let me make sure Valve is committed to this. Let me make sure it like works and is a platform that will, you know, that I can actually play games on, and I'm not just like buying like a novelty, basically. And like 2 years of existence proof that out, and they put out a new one and I immediately bought it. And I think that more and more people, I mean, I've had like friends of mine who never showed interest before are like post OLED, like, yeah, I'm considering one now. Like, either the OLED or just the cheaper regular model. And, like, that is new. That is the first time I've had conversations with people, like, outside of, like, our sphere who are really into... who have never been into PC gaming. They've had consoles or handhelds, but never been into PC gaming. And the concept of, like, it needs to get tens of millions of users, like... You are going to continue to lose people being interested in your store, Epic. Like, I used to grab, like, all the freebies that Epic gives out on the game store around this time of year, primarily because why not, right? But, if, like, I had the Epic Game Store installed. I just barely opened it. And now it's like, why bother? Like, I'm playing all my PC games on my deck. Why bother buying or grabbing a free one that I'll never touch because it's not going to work on this piece of hardware unless I jump through some hoops?
I didn't realize that I owned GTA 5 through Epic Store because they gave it away for free. I'd completely forgotten that.
I have so many games through there.
Yeah, I claimed one of their free games and I was like, oh my God, they gave away GTA 5 a while ago.
Yeah.
Have never played it because I don't have a PC that plays that. I mean, I guess I could get the Epic Game Store working on my Steam Deck, but that's my primary gaming PC right now.
Exactly.
So I don't have it. Anyway, I mean, Google lost. Like, whether or not you agree with the verdict, I think the jury found Google to be just a scummy defendant. And, like, that is what it comes down to, is that they lost handily because they did not show any good faith in their arguing. They lied. They obscured a lot of what they had said in emails. They, like, tried to remap it to some other argument and just make it sound plausible, but they were just not an honest defendant, and they deserve to lose, and that was it. So there you go. We're not sure what's going to happen. The recourse will not be released until next year at some point. Google has already said that it will appeal the verdict, because of course it will, and this will drone on for another year or two before we get any conclusions. But in the meantime, Epic will run with this victory as far as it can. All right, let's move on and finish it off with our end of year awards. So every year, Android Police comes out with both a internal and reader choice set of awards. Will and Ara, run us through the winners, and then we can talk about some of the surprises, I guess. We don't have to talk about all of them, but... Any that you want to highlight?
Do you want to talk about the Open? Because I think that was one of the bigger surprises for me.
I was just about to say that. Yeah, by now it's not a surprise anymore. But our Best Phone Award went to the Pixel 8 Pro. I think everyone saw this coming. I just did this, but I believe it's been 4 years, I think, since Android Police gave a, maybe five now, since Android Police gave an award the best phone of the year award to a non-Pixel device. And I should say that, like, all of the editors vote on these. That's how we do this. We assign them a rank from 10 to 1. Well, in terms of the phones, there were 10 phones nominated. 10 to 1, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst. Then we added the points value. That's how this is decided. It's not just me as phones editor picking this or something, because the thing I gave a 10 to was the OnePlus Open, which is our runner-up. And I agree. I think that is the bigger surprise here, is that not just that a foldable one runner-up, but that it was a OnePlus foldable, it was a OnePlus phone. It was their first foldable, technically, although, you know, the Oppo partnership kind of complicates that. But I think this phone came out of nowhere for a lot of people in the tech industry, kind of really impressing right out of the gate, and with not just really good hardware, but some surprisingly excellent, like, software tweaks to make a foldable feel more natural, I guess, or you know, especially when it comes to multitasking. I believe it lost first place by 5 points, which, you know, when you're talking about 11 or 12 people voting, that's really not that big of a gap. It is weird to talk more about the runner-up than the winner, but, like, I think that's the real story here, is that OnePlus has a bit of goodwill going into 2024, and I hope they run with it.
I mean, I still have not used a, what's the phrase? A taco-style foldable? I've still only used the,
I like that.
Taco versus hamburger?
No, I mean, I usually say, like, book style, but I think I prefer taco style. I like that.
There's nothing wrong with equating
like hot dog versus hamburger, but
yeah, that too.
It's all the same thing.
The only hot dog one is the Z Fold 5. The Z Fold 5 is a hot dog.
Yeah,
that's true.
But yeah, I mean, I still haven't used any of the taco type foldables, and the OnePlus Open is the only one that I would want to try at this point. Because I have seen enough and heard enough about the Pixel Fold that I'm like, I will wait a couple of years on that. The Galaxy Fold has always seemed awkward to me from a software perspective and a little bit from the aspect ratio. And yeah, the thing that you said about three apps, and it's like, oh, you can have one app on the left, one app on the right, and one floating above. And I'm like, where the hell has this been for half a decade?
Truly,
like, this is how it should have always been.
It's like using a tablet where you just kind of can't see some of the tablet, but, like, it's all that it's or like a much larger tablet than what you're dealing with the Open. It's like, it's very cool. Like, it is difficult to tell people to go try because this phone isn't really in stores. Like, it's not at carrier stores for you to go demo, but, like, if you ever get the chance, the Open is a really cool idea, and I'm excited to hopefully see how people, you know, companies like Google, like Samsung with larger footprints respond to it.
Yeah, I want to see the OnePlus Open 2, and I really hope accessory makers actually give it the time of day this time, because with the delays that the OnePlus Open had, accessories have been a bear to find. Because that's a phone that I'm like, okay, I would use that long term, and yes, it would absolutely need a case. Although I have to say, the texture on it, they had a texture on the OnePlus Open that felt pretty good, didn't they?
On the black model, it's like a faux leather, yeah.
Yeah, vegan leather. Love that. But yeah, no, that's the phone that I most wanted to try this year. I still haven't gotten to touch a Pixel 8 at all. But at this point, I don't think, like, I'm missing that much. The other thing that kind of ran away with me when it came to the year-end stuff was the wearables. Because I was like, I really thought this was going to be a closer thing between the Galaxy Watch 6 and the Pixel Watch 2. And the Pixel Watch 2 just kind of underwhelmed me massively. Granted, the Galaxy Watch 6 was a very, very iterative update. The Galaxy Watch 6 Classic, at least we went from titanium chonkiness back to, oh, this looks like a respectable watch and it has the rotating bezel, because the rotating bezel is the absolute best way to deal with Samsung's very circular interface. But the Pixel Watch 2 still has a fair number of the problems that we had from the Pixel Watch 1, and it still has the limitations of Fitbit. It still has, I don't think that we saw any real upgrade in any of the fitness capabilities on here or the performance capabilities on here, right? You got to use the Pixel Watch 2, didn't you, Will?
Yeah, I used it a little bit. Taylor was really the one trying it out. To me, it just comes down to, like, if I'm recommending a wearable to someone, what am I going to tell them to buy? And it's honestly just going to be, like, I trust Samsung's hardware a little bit more.
Yeah, and you don't have to buy proprietary bands. Exactly. The Samsung is priced lower list price, and then it gets deals
that was exactly
way more.
That's
the Galaxy Watch 6 was had some fantastic deals at Black Friday, and the Pixel Watch 2 didn't see any deal until this week.
Yeah, that is my biggest thing is the price. It's just that, like, these watches are not that... they're fairly similar, to be honest with you. Like, there are software differences, but, you know, if you're looking for an Android wearable that serves as a fitness tracker, that is not a very large, you know, classic-style watch. These are the two you're looking at, and it's just easier to be like, well, they're pretty similar. Get the cheaper one. Like, I don't know, like... Even if you have a Pixel and you have to install a few Samsung apps, like, whatever, go.
Well, you don't even have to install a few Samsung, well, Samsung Health and Galaxy Wearable. Yeah. But, like, part of why I love my Galaxy Watch is also because whether I'm on a Pixel or a Samsung, I can still sync my timers and my alarms to the watch. Because all I have to do is install the Google Clock app on the watch and everything will just sync up, which has just been wonderful. I want to see more from wearables in 2024, but yeah.
I don't think it's possible. Like, there's not a whole lot to do. I think Google should have made two sizes this year.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a given. But I disagree slightly on the performance and fitness stuff. I think Google made pretty significant strides there. It's a much better fitness tracker this year. It's much more accurate. It auto detects your workouts more robustly. The battery's better. Overall performance is much, much better. No more stuttering. I think this is the watch Google wanted to make. Whether or not it does enough to compete with the Galaxy Watch 6 Pro or a classic, I don't know. I think it looks a lot better than any of the Galaxy Watches, even the classic. So from my perspective, it's a better product because it's nicer to look at. And I think I enjoy Wear OS more on a Pixel Watch than I do on a Galaxy Watch. I still think it's too expensive, but that is par for the course. But yeah, I think Google did a really good job with the Pixel Watch 2, and I probably would still give the nod to the Galaxy Watch 6 Classic because it's more appealing to more people, right? There's two sizes, battery's slightly better, the display's better. I think getting around the OS with the physical bezel is nicer. The quick-release straps are wonderful because they're both proprietary. And you can just put in a regular quick release strap if you want. So you're not limited to Google's very, very small and expensive ecosystem of watch straps.
Or, you know, an absolute sea of like no names from China.
Exactly, which are not good. So
some of them are okay, but yeah.
You can put on any of your 20 mil, 22 mil watch straps on the Galaxy Watches and they just work. So
20.
Is it 20 for all sizes?
It's 20 for all of them. Doesn't matter if you get the big or the little one. The lug size is the same.
Even better.
Yeah, that's why all the bands are interchangeable with all the models.
It just shows Samsung's confidence and maturity in creating hardware. But yeah, I still think from a overall like hardware and software together perspective, the Pixel Watch gets my vote.
To what you were saying, Daniel, I think my only pushback would be that like, the Pixel Watch should have been there on a lot of that stuff last year, and I'm not just going to, like, award them for catching up. Like,
yeah.
I'm happy they did, but considering this is a $350 watch, it is just frustrating to be like, oh, no, like, the fitness tracking's good this year, and the, you know, it's got a different charger, and you still have proprietary bands, but, like, you know, like, it's the performance is where every other watch is, like, it is difficult for me to be like, good job, Google, you did what, you know, Apple and Samsung were doing 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially with that charger, because they swapped to a different charger that basically nobody would have had if they were upgrading to this watch. And if memory serves, I think the charging is a little bit... Was the charging a little bit faster or a little bit slower? Because I wanted to say it was... I thought I heard something about it being slightly slower than the Pixel Watch 1.
I think there was an update to the Pixel Watch 1 that slowed down charging. I don't think the Pixel Watch 2... is slower than the Pixel Watch 1.
You're correct. This Reddit post is confirming that, Daniel. Okay. You are correct.
So other than that, I mean, there aren't a lot of surprises on this list. The OnePlus Open wins best foldable. The Razer Plus gets the runner-up. Best tablet. I mean, Google didn't even win the best tablet category with the Pixel tablet, which I think says a lot about the Pixel tablet.
They shouldn't have. I know. I'm kind of surprised they're runner-up.
It was the only notable tablet this whole year.
Yeah, it's just a weak year for tablets. I mean, every year is a weak year for tablets, but this year in particular, even if you open up Apple into the conversation, it was a week. Did Apple put out a new tablet in 2023? Actually, I don't think they did. I think their last new tablet was the 10th gen iPad last year. Yeah, I don't think they put out a new iPad this year.
Yeah. I think the iPad should just win this category by default every year.
I was going to say, they looked the same this Black Friday compared to last Black Friday, so I think you're right.
Yeah, no, I believe this was the first year since the first iPad, basically, that they just skipped an entire year on the... Because we're waiting for Pros, we're waiting for Airs, we're waiting for Minis, and the 10th gen arrived last year right before the holidays. So yeah, that's all of them. And now they're saying Apple's going to fix, not that this is an Apple podcast, but they're going to fix the iPad lineup by... adding another iPad Air size to it. You go, Apple. Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's what we've all been asking for.
That will solve all of our problems.
Well, there were no tablets this year, but God, there were all the earbuds and the headphones, which was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a good year for earbuds and headphones. The Bose QuietComfort Ultra headphones won for over a year.
I'm wearing
and then
them
the
right
Sony...
now. I've been living in them all month. They're wonderful. Yeah, thank they're God great. For them.
And then the Sony WF-1000XM5s won for best earbuds, which absolutely, I think the QuietComfort Ultra earbuds did not deserve to win. They're big. They didn't upgrade.
They don't have multi-point either.
Much.
Yeah. Can I say something crazy? I've gotten the XM5s in and I've tried them. I'm still trying to find tips that work with them. I like the XM4s more than I like the XM5s. Because the volume controls have been, they changed the volume controls on the XM5. So now instead of it just like, oh, you put the volume control on one ear and your playback control on the other, it's your volume controls are like up tapping like multiple times in order to control the audio versus like a single tap or a double tap for whatever other control you put in there. So it's like, oh, I have playback controls on both ears and changing my volume levels is not going to happen quickly on either one.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
The other thing is just that you can't buy regular tips for it either because... there's no grill over the actual like little earbud canal. So you have to buy buds that have a filter built into them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, that was one of those things that if I got them in and I went to put my regular tips on them and I'm like, I can't use these. Well, crap.
Silly. I mean, this is the same company that released the PlayStation Portal. So you win some, you lose a lot. Like Sony's... PS5 Mini is actually not mini, nor is it better in any way. So, like, the company had a lot of misses from a hardware perspective this year.
They sure did.
They did.
I really don't understand this company.
Now, this isn't a shit on the XM5s entirely, because they're much lighter, they're much easier to fit in your ears. They absolutely should have gone matte instead of glossy with the texture on these sides of the earbuds. And it's got a much smaller charging case. It's a mostly great product that has a couple of decisions I don't understand that half of them could be fixed with a software update that I'm almost certain they will not do.
And the hardware stuff, gotta save a couple of them for the XM6s in 2025.
Yeah.
Daniel, I'm curious, speaking of audio products, I think you are the person with the most experience with the Sonos Era 300 and that won our best speaker. Do you have any thoughts there?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yes, buy it.
I mean, yes, buy okay. it. Like it's an incredible speaker. Even if you don't need spatial audio support, it's just, it's such a good, powerful speaker. If you could afford it, it's the best standalone speaker you could buy. Like I have one that just like lives in the corner of my living room and it is so much bigger than it looks. Like the sound is just so much bigger than it looks. And whether or not you agree or disagree with Dolby Atmos remasters, and a lot of people hate them, you could listen to regular old stereo mixes on this thing and still be blown away by it. So I highly recommend it. It's the best product Sonos has made in a long time. That said, like if you don't need the size, if you have a smaller room or you don't need Atmos support, the Era 100 is just a better deal. And getting two Era 100s for some people might be a better decision for the same amount of money. I would avoid the Move 2, though. Like, I liked the Move 2, but I don't think it does a lot to justify the fact that, like, it's still a portable speaker that you will rarely move. So unless you really want to have the ability to, like, take it to your backyard for a barbecue, I would just say, like, go with the Era 300. It's the same price, and it's a much more powerful speaker.
Hey, don't knock the ability to move my speaker from my bedroom to my living room on a lazy day where I just do not want to stop the music.
Yeah, I mean, but there you go. Like, if the Sonos Roam was a good product, then I would recommend that. But, like, this is too big to even move from room to room most of the time.
Yeah.
So the Roam, I think, is once the Roam 2 comes out next year and they inevitably fix all the Bluetooth issues that first one had, I think that will be the one that I recommend to most people because that one sounded good, but it's like a tenth of the or a fifth of the weight sounds good enough for most rooms and like you can throw it in a bag. I just don't understand the move too. Like I, even as I reviewed it, I was like, I love the sound from this thing. I love the fact that I can move it from room to room, but I'm not going to do that. Like, let's be honest. So the Era 300 is a better product.
Anything else you guys want to show?
No, I mean, okay, there's good. You'll see the whole list on the website, and we'll throw the list in our.
There's a lot more categories we didn't hit, yes. So go check those out.
All right, we want to know what your favorite products of the year were. What were your favorite phone, tablet, watch, earbuds, everything? Tell us your favorite games you found, your favorite apps. That's your homework for the week. Send it to podcast@androidplace.com. Do you have any thoughts on Beeper? Do you have any thoughts on the trial and the Play Store? Do you think that the Play Store is the best place to download games on Android? Just straight up, would you like to see an Epic Game Store on Android? I think that would be an interesting question to ponder these days because you may end up seeing it sooner than later. Send that to us. We'd love to hear from you. And then next week, we will talk about all of our favorite non-tech content, favorite movies, TV shows, games, apps, books, anything else that you've enjoyed. So get ready for that. We will put that all together for you. Until then, Ara, Will, thank you for being here. And hope you all have a very good week. We'll talk to you very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.